Blog Talk Radio. All right. Good evening and welcome once again, everyone, to Madame Perry's Salon, the podcast that loves you, the podcast where fascinating people meet. I am your host, your spiritual advisor, and cruise director, Madame Perry. But you don't have to call me Madam. You can call me Jan, JP, Perry, Jennifer. I'm just happy to be here once again with you and happy that you're here listening. Thanks to everyone who subscribes on the different podcast platforms and people that leave messages, people that talk to me about the guest later and share the podcast with others. I am so grateful to you because you help me keep getting fantastic guests like the people we've had. I've never had a bad guest, but you help me keep so many fascinating guests, like the ones who have been on for the last 400 and something episodes, the ones coming up, and the guest we have tonight for sure. To give them some updates on things too, don't forget that Franny Goldie, if you remember her, that was a very popular episode, and I think she's going to be coming back soon, but Franny Goldie, who known first as a songwriter, Grammy Award nominated and winning songwriter. You probably know most of the songs she's written for other people, like Night Shift for the Commodores, Stick With You for the Pussycat Dolls, Dreaming for Selena. But she has a clothing business, too. She's a designer, and her pants were described by Adam Glassman of the Oprah magazine is magic pants. They've been featured on The View. Anyway, if you go to her website, and she emailed me last week, she's got a lot of new stuff there. Go to the website, FranneGolde, Goldie, FranneGoldie.com, and choose whatever your heart desires. And whenever you get ready to pay to check out, just put in the initials MPS for Madame Perry Salon. Franny's going to give you a sweet little discount. Don't miss your discount. And the clothes, they're just fabulous. And they really are magic pants. What else is coming up soon? By the way, in February, the Atlanta Steampunk Expo takes place. I've never been before, but I will be there this year. I think I'm going to present some panels about women, Victorian women who studied astronomy and made some fantastic discoveries, whether they got credit for it or not. And I'll be doing a live broadcast from there. And then, of course, in March is Wild Wild West Con, but we'll get more on that later, too. If there's anything else, anybody, if I forgot to mention, you can always message me on Facebook, either through Madame Perry Salon or Jennifer Maudette Perry. But anyway, here we go. And I've gotten a lot of questions about this in the last 48 hours. My guest tonight, native New York and New York-based actress, performer, writer, has major, as I put in my description, she has major IMDb. Our IMDb film cred, TV cred, co-starred on shows like Blue Bloods, Homeland. She's a top communications coach, host of Mentors on the Mic podcast, and this is what's fascinating and how I first found her. I've seen her before in TV and film, but didn't know any more about this lady. But Mentors on the Mic, oh my gosh, if you're any kind of actor, performer, writer, director, and you just wish that there would be somebody that would give you the straight information on what to do, what not to do, how to advance your career, how to prep your career, this lady's got it going on for you in this podcast. So I could just keep going on, or I could bring you in. bring her here. It's her first time in the genie bottle, so we're going to all treat her as lovely as we can because we want her to come back again and again. She's fascinating. Michelle Simone Miller, welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. Come in and be comfortable.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I am delighted to have you here. And just the amount of work you've done. I kept thinking, how much TV movie, and you've done off Broadway, you've done a lot of theater. How could you do so much work? But you started young, and I think one of your first appearances was on the Rosie O'Donnell Show.
Yeah, that was a fun thing I did when I was in elementary school. My theater teacher chose, I went to like a normal public school in New York, and our teacher chose like, I think a handful of us. I have a picture on my phone somewhere. I'll have to send it to you. But it's like,
please.
There were like eight of us. Yeah, it's so good. There were like eight of us that she chose who were like very, you know, like loved our theater class. And she got the opportunity for us to be on the Rosie O'Donnell Show for two episodes. So we did like a little skit of like the best picture nominees for that year. And then we like lip sang a song for her birthday. It was Rosie O'Donnell's birthday. So I have the footage somewhere on VHS at my mom's place, but I haven't seen it in years. But it was so much fun.
Oh, wow. I can imagine. And that's got to have been, I'm wondering, was it daunting because it was such a big show, or was it because you were young enough to where you were too young to be freaked out like an adult would, like I would?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I remember a lot of it very well, but I remember that like we filmed a lot of it in our theater class. So, you know, we went to the studio and we were able to meet her in person and we got these awesome goodie bags. So that part was very exciting. But the actual stuff that we filmed, and maybe this was because they just had the foresight to know that like it's hard to put like kids on the spot and have them do stuff while they're being filmed live. So we did it in our classroom. So both the acting skit and the lip syncing part, which were on two different episodes, were both filmed and shot in our theater class. And so, you know, we did get to go to the studio, and so I was a little nervous for that, but we had already filmed that other stuff, so I felt a little bit less nervous, if you will.
How was, like, Rosie and the other crew that worked on the show, did they make the kids, make all of you feel comfortable?
Yeah, I just have the fondest memories. I mean, she really was so super sweet, was so nice to all of us. The crew was really nice to us, and I just remember we got these incredible goodie bags where, like, we got these – I don't know if it was near St. Patrick's Day. I think her birthday is in March, but I could be wrong. But we got these, like, really fun headbands with, like, these, like, four-leaf clovers attached to it. And I remember we got these gray shirts that said the Rosie O'Donnell logo on it, and the shirt was so big for me. It was definitely for an adult, and I was, like, swimming in it. But, it, you know, I wore it all the time. So long, because I was so excited. So the goodie bag was amazing. We just had a really, really fun experience, and they treated us really well. And she was so sweet. She took this great picture. It was a Polaroid picture, and we each got our own Polaroid picture that we got to take home.
Oh, how wonderful. So I can imagine the very, very young Michelle Simone Miller going, this is it for me.
Yeah, you know, it was right around that time, and I remember where I was in elementary school, very, like, not far from that theater class, but it was outside the theater class in the auditorium somewhere. And I remember having the realization at a very young age, oh, my God, wait, I think people could do this for a living. Like, I think this is, like, a career that, like, people can have. And as soon as I realized that, I knew in my core that that was what I was supposed to do. Like, I just knew it from – and I must have been, I mean, I was second grade or something. So I must have been 7 or 8, I think. But I just knew that, like, oh, this is what I'm to do. And I'll say this, you know, at that time, I mean, that was a huge, amazing thing that I was able to be a part of. But, like, all our school plays up until, like, fourth grade, like, all the other years, I never got the lead in anything. I never got the solos. I never got the lead. Even when I was in fourth grade, I didn't get the lead. I got, like, a minor part that I was really excited for, but I never was the lead role, and yet I just knew, you know, I'm meant to be doing this, and I was so, like, just in love with the whole process.
Wow, that's That's fantastic. Now, you had that feeling even young, like when you said that you didn't get the leads, you didn't get this, but you still kept doing it. That made me think of, you know, I think we were talking recently about the actress Ardan Marin, who's most recently on Insatiable. And in her book, Little Miss Little Compton, she talks about similar things when she decided this is what she wanted to do, and she would try out for things in school and plays. And if she didn't get a part or didn't get in it at all, you know, her mother would go, "That's fine. Just go ahead and write your own. Write your own."
Oh, what a great advice.
Yeah. So she said, just the main thing is don't say I can't do it or I don't get a part. Come up with something. Do the pivot. Don't think it's all over. And so you definitely didn't slack. You just thought, okay, all right, this is what I'm doing. Somebody else needs to be the lead now. But
yeah, I wish someone gave me that advice. I will say the way I pivoted, I was that person who was like obsessed with the play. So I would run lines with everybody. I would be the prop manager, the light manager. I mean, I still had small roles during those times, but like, I remember the way they did these school plays, because there were so many kids, they would have two different casts. And so I'd be maybe in a small, small, tiny role that was almost insignificant in one cast, and I was like the lighting manager in the other cast, and or prop manager, or whatever I was. And I would also just be, like, I would go to all the rehearsals. I would, you know, help people with lines all the time. So I just felt like, okay, like I was devastated when I didn't get a lead role. Like it wasn't even like I wanted a minor role. I wanted the lead role. And so when I wouldn't get a lead role, and I would get like the tiniest of roles. And I remember why I didn't get those roles in retrospect. But at the time I was like, why did I get that? I don't understand. I'm just as good. But, you know, there was this element of like, I'm just going to, you know, put my like love into this anyway. And so once I got over the sadness of not getting the lead, I would just be involved in any way I can. And I just loved performing. I loved being on stage. I loved being a part of other people's fun. And so that's how I was able to like deal with that. But I wish someone told me, make your own work. I mean, at a young age like that, that's a great habit to start.
Oh yeah. Well, now tell us then if you would about your studies and training after that, as you grew up and then went on to work professionally.
Yeah, so, you know, after I went to this elementary school, I went to a small junior high that really didn't have a theater program. And so I had a very small class. My class was like 15 kids or something in my grade. So I was known as the actor, right? I was known as the person who always wanted the part. If we were doing a scene in class for something, if we were reading a play, I was the one who wanted to jump up. I'm the actor, right? And I would take acting classes on Saturdays. I would go to theater camp. And, you know, when you're known as the actor, you know, when any opportunity came to the school, which was very infrequent, I was the one that was pushed ahead. I was the one where, like, my teacher would be like, oh, you should call in Michelle. And I remember there was one woman who came to the school, and she showcased a play. She was talking about a play. She had a couple of people read lines. And unbeknownst to me, my teacher had told her, you should choose Michelle. She's our actress. She's our little actress. And in like sixth grade or something. And I remember I came up and I performed whatever scene it was, and I was so happy. It was like, you know, just this is the most exciting day of the whole year. And that eventually turned into an audition for that same play that was a showcase for Off-Broadway. And so, you know, and it's a crazy thing, and I'll say this too for any actors out there listening. The first time I auditioned for the show, I actually, not for the showcase part, it was for like a small regional production of it, I not only didn't get a part, I got an understudy for two roles. And I remember my best friend was the lead, and I was so jealous, but I was also happy for her, but super jealous. But I came to every rehearsal. I knew all the lines for the parts that I was understudying. And I was so invested whenever someone was on their role in rehearsal. And then when the time came for us to audition for a higher version of that play, I was ready. And that's when I booked a role. And that's when, and that was a higher stakes audition. And I remember I went in for the callback and I was like, I know this material so well. I've been going to all these rehearsals for the show for like months now. And that's when I booked the higher level version of the show. And that's when I was working with actors that were doing this professionally. I saw, you know, I saw the older actors were all in Equity. They were all in the union. The other actors who played the older kids in this show, they were all going to professional performing arts schools. They were going to LaGuardia. So all of a sudden I was like, oh, wow, this is real. And that's when I was every day after school, and sometimes I would leave early from school, I would go to rehearsal. So it was really fun, and it was a really great way of going, oh, this is different than like a school thing, huh? This is real.
How fantastic. So the situation where you were the understudy on a couple of parts and helping everyone, and, I mean, it's like your guardian angel is going, no, trust me, this is best. You're going to be so ready.
You know, if that little girl knew that, like, you know, just a few months later, there was going to be another opportunity to do that same show, but on a bigger scale, you know, I would have saved so much heartbreak and sadness of not getting a big role in that, or not getting any role in that show. I was just an understudy, but in that same show on a higher scale, I was a role. I would have rather preferred to get that role then than to get a role in the other show, which I don't even know if they ended up performing that. I obviously wasn't part of it anymore, but once I got the higher version of it.
Well, how fantastic, though. And it must have been a good feeling to be there and feel ready, feel like you belong.
Yes. Yeah, it really did, especially acting with all these people who had more experience than I did outside of schools, and you know, feeling like, oh, wow, there's some professional actors here. At least I knew the play really well. You know, at least I could do this play. I already knew a lot of the lines in my heart. You know, like, I knew the role so well because I had been this understudy for months. So that felt good. At least I had that bit of confidence.
Oh, yeah, you could have picked up for anybody, given them a cue, anything, you know, line, Michelle's got it. Now, when did you start working on television or film?
That wasn't until after, you know, college. I went to a high school and I did school plays there. And then I went to college and I was doing, you know, I studied theater there as well as English. And it wasn't until like my junior year of college, that I sat down and went, wait a second, I've been doing theater all of my life, but I see myself in film and TV and commercials. Like it almost was this realization, like if I want to go down this road, which I always have intended to do, I better get more experience in film and TV before I pursue this professionally. So in college, not only was I trying to audition for stuff outside of school, but I started doing student films, and that's really what started becoming the bulk of my resume outside of theater, and my acting reels. You're supposed to kind of have this video reel to showcase to agents and managers and even casting directors that you've been on set before. And usually the first reels that most actors have are filled with student films and low-budget films. So in college, I started working on that, and then I graduated college and moved to New York, not knowing anything about how to get started professionally as an actor, because I really done anything professional since I was, you know, in junior high. It was a while ago. So I had to learn how to get an agent. I had to learn how to find an agent. I had to learn how to get a manager. I had to learn how to meet casting directors and submit myself for low budget projects so I could build my resume and stuff. So that's when I started doing all that, and it wasn't until, like, you know, a couple of years in that I was starting to book the first few things. But the first major thing I booked was a film called Winter's Tale, and it was with Russell Crowe and Will Smith and Colin Farrell, and, you know, the great Jennifer Connelly was in it, and it was it was directed and written by Akiva Goldsman, who wrote films such as A Beautiful Mind and I'm Legend and Cinderella Man. So really fantastic films. And so, I mean, I remember everything about booking this role, being on set, and then, you know, subsequently finding out that I was cut from the film. And I was on the I was on the deleted scenes on the DVD, though. So at least I have that. But it was my first experience getting such a huge win. And then that, like, getting cut from a film, you know, which every actor has at least one story that's like that. But, you know, that was my first initial foray into the professional side of things.
Magnificent. When you then tell us about, you know, I've mentioned that you've been on, you co-starred on shows like Blue Bloods, Homeland. You know, we want a little insight on that, Michelle.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that was really fun. You get to a point where you're auditioning for all these major television shows. Like, I've been, like, the show The Blacklist, I think I've auditioned for that show 14 or 15 times. You know, you get to a place where hopefully the casting directors like you and remember you, and maybe you're not right for those roles, but they just keep bringing you back. So that's super ideal in that way. But, you know, for Blue Bloods and Homeland, I actually booked them, I think, within, like, a month or 5 or 6 weeks from each other. Like, it was a very quick thing. I booked one, and then I booked the second one. And I was a really big fan of Homeland. I used to watch that show with my mom a lot. So for me, that was very exciting to get on. I will say, though, you know, when you get on set, people always ask me, did you meet Tom Selleck? Did you meet Claire Danes? And truthfully, you only meet them if you have a scene with them. And both my scenes were not with the major actors. So I didn't meet the supporting cast and the major series regulars who are not those famous people. But it was the most exciting thing. I mean, I have to tell you, you know, when you're on set for these projects, you do the same thing 150 times sometimes. Like, they need it from every angle. They need many takes, especially if there's many people in both the scenes that I was in both Homeland and Blue Bloods. There were a lot of people. And so when there's a lot of people, sometimes it takes hours to do the very simplest of scenes. You know, you see on television, it ends up being 30 seconds or 2 minutes or 3 minutes, but really it was hours of filming. And so, you know, for both those things, it was the most amount of fun. You know, you go in for a fitting, you get to try on these outfits, they take pictures of you, then you get to set, you get your own trailer, you get, you know, all your wardrobe outline, you know, hung up with your name on it, you go to hair and makeup. It's just like the most incredible experience getting to be on the big professional sets like that. There's nothing like it.
How cool. And that does sound like fun. It's sort of like almost like a summer camp for adults.
Exactly. That's how I feel. I remember I did one scene in Homeland like 150 times, not even exaggerate. It was just so many from different angles, hours and hours. And I remember right at the end when they wrapped us all and we were able to, you know, change out of our costumes, get our stuff and leave, you just have this feeling of like, I'm meant to be doing this. Like, again, just like, oh, this joy. And they always say as an actor that our job is actually auditioning and our vacation is getting to work.
Ah, I've never heard that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so just let me stop here to say, if you're listening live, and this is Thursday, January 12th, 8:23 p.m. Eastern, and you're listening to me talking with actor, podcaster, Michelle Simone Miller. If you've got a question, give us a call. The number is 646-716-9922. It's a toll-free call in the continental U.S., but 646-716-9922. Or if you're in a situation, Michelle, I think we've all been there, where you can't make a call, maybe because of your day job or something, or your night job, whatever, you can always send me a comment or question through Facebook message, either through Jennifer Maudette Perry or Madame Perry Salon. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, Michelle?
Oh, yeah. You know, you get to a place sometimes where you're listening to stuff, but you just can't. you can't stop what you're doing, or you can't like call in and, you know, make a phone call. You don't want everyone to know that you've been listening to something while working.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like when I was working customer service, I had to crawl under my desk to win a contest on the phone through a radio. Huh? Yeah.
So
what are you doing down there? I lost something.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my earring. You got them on. Well, it was another one from yesterday. So, yeah. Tell me, give us some fun stuff from a show. I mean, you know, especially from the big shows. And I'm not asking for any dirt because we don't do that kind of thing here. Like, I know I worked, I was a resident townsperson for a season on Stargirl. And the first time I went, I had my corgi because it was pedestrian and dog. Then after a while, the corgi just didn't want to walk anymore. So I had to sort of drag her along. Or I did a week on, when you were talking about how you do something 150 times and it just takes, but it's just a few seconds on film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did a week on Stranger Things, and it's the one where there's a carnival, the big town carnival for 4th of July.
Yeah,
and that was a week's worth of work, but it was in the middle of the night in October. So we're all wearing summer clothes in 25 degree weather. But yeah, holding on to get to let's see, they kept giving me some cotton candy, but it kept melting on my hand. You know, it's so sticky. Yeah, so you tell us some of the fun things like that that people don't see when they just see the finished picture.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of stories came out from Winter's Tale that's worth telling. So the first one I was on, remember, you know, I played this Native American woman who finds a baby. And the baby grows up and ends up being Colin Farrell. He's the lead role. And so, you know, it's very exciting. You know, I'm there, and it's my first major role in a professional set. It's so many people there. And, you know, they treat you very well, you know, as an actor, even with a small part. You know, they give you a trailer, and they give you hair and makeup. They give you the costume, obviously. And then they also, like, if it's cold out, they, you know, depending on what shoes you wear, let's say they give you these, like, you know, I think in my case, moccasins. But because it's cold, when you're not working, they give you UGG boots and they give you a long, warm coat, like a coat that you want to take home, like one of those really fluffy, like really nice down coats. And so anytime you're not working, they have someone who basically follows you. They're like an AD, they're like PA. So they're like a production assistant, and they follow you. They're in charge of you as the actor. And they hold your coat and your UGGs for when you're working. And then in between takes, which there are a lot of, as you know, they insist you wear these UGGs in the coat because they want to make sure you're comfortable. And so if you're like, oh, no, it's fine, they're like, are you sure? It's cold. And then they give you, like, they bring you to a place with heat lamps. And, like, it's very fun. But anyway, here's my story. So that day, my whole thing is, you know, I'm walking along. I see a baby that, like, was in this, like, toy boat that gets, like, sort of pushed ashore, and that baby, it's implied I raised that baby, and it becomes Colin Farrell as an adult. And, you know, I see this baby, and you do it a couple times with rehearsal, and I'm wearing these UGG boots, and it's totally fine. And then I wear on the regular boots, regular shoes, and I lift this baby, and it's a doll. The first few times they do it, based on the angle, they have me lift a doll. And as I'm lifting the doll, and I'm walking with this doll to my other actor who's there, I slip and I fall really hard on my butt, and it hurts. But of course there's like a million people watching you, and they're all coming over. Are you okay? Like I wiped out, and up, and I'm like, oh no, I'm totally fine. I'm ignoring it. All the adrenaline's there. I'm in pain. My definitely is bruised all over, but I'm like, no, it's fine. It's fine. I'm professional. It's cool. I'm, like, also really young at the time. I must be, like, 23 or 22. And so, you know, everyone's like, are you okay? I'm like, oh, no, I'm totally fine. I'm like, oh, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. So then, you know, we do it again. And then eventually they introduce the real baby. And they put the real baby down, and they're like, okay, same thing as you did with the doll. Pick up the real baby. And I didn't, you know, I was so good in my head. I was like, I'm not high maintenance. I didn't say anything about me when I was doing it all those times, you know, mm-hmm. just in case, that, you know, making sure I wouldn't fall. But I said to them, listen, it's different if I fall on my butt. That I can handle. I will never be okay with being with falling with this baby in my hand. And I said, is there any way you can make it less slippery? Because what had happened was they had put the baby or the doll, wherever it was, in a boat that was right around all this moss. And that's why it was slippery. And I said, the moccasins they're giving me are very thin. And on this moss, I was slipping. So I said to them, I don't care if I fall, but I will never forgive myself if I fall with this baby in my hands. And so mm-hmm. they immediately got to work, removed a lot of the moss. And I was able to film all these, you know, shoot all these scenes with this, shoot all these takes with this baby, and the baby grabbed my hair. And I think that's still the shot that ended up being used on the DVD. Huh. So it was really fun, but it was just, I was like, I can't fall with this baby in my hand. I can't do it. And it's not the first time, actually, I had a crying baby on set with me. I was in a commercial where I had this crying baby as well. And I remember they needed to use the backup baby. They had two babies on set just in case. So it's always fun working with kids.
So that's why they have a back. Okay, that's why they have more than one baby.
I see
what
they're
looking for.
Case.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, I want to talk about your podcast, Mentors on the Mic, but I'm going to take just a moment to play something. And don't forget, folks, you can call or send a message in any question for Simone Miller, and we'll be right back after a message from my good friend, Sebastian.
I mean, the world has gone crazy, right? I mean, this whole pandemic, I don't even know if I'm coming or going anymore. You know what I mean? But the one thing during the pandemic that I found out, right, that was a good thing was the Madame Perry Salon. I mean, this podcast, right, when you hear her laughing, all you want to do is laugh, right? When her dog's barking in the background and she's talking to the duck, she's going through an interview, and I'm like, this podcast is the best podcast I've ever heard before. You know what I mean?
Oh, don't listen to him. Anyway. And it's a wonder we haven't had dogs barking. But anyway, your podcast, Mentors on the Mic. Oh, my word. This is fantastic. Tell me how you got started with this and why.
Well, first of all, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I will say it was right at the height of the pandemic. The pandemic had just started. We were all super nervous, didn't know what was going on, very anxious time, all at home. And, you know, for the first few weeks, actually, acting stuff was pretty busy. I think a lot of casting directors stepped in and were like, oh, let's do open calls. It's a chance to meet all these actors virtually. So first few weeks, I was super busy. And then it got really quiet, right? And mm-hmm. I was like, well, what do I want to do that I've never felt like I had time for? What kind of thing have I always given the excuse of, I don't have time for this? No, I have the time, right? I don't have kids at home. I was living with a roommate. Like, I really had time to do whatever it was. And the first thing that came to mind was a podcast. But the only problem was that I didn't know what it would be about. And so in the next couple of weeks or few weeks, I started determining what would a podcast be about. And so right around the same time, simultaneously, I was making these panels for my alma mater. I went to Brandeis University. And I was doing stuff for their alumni program, and I was creating these panels with really incredible people in the entertainment world. And I posted virtually my first panel with these four incredible people that I recruited to be part of this panel. And I thought, you know what? I could talk to each of them for an hour, let alone all four of them for this hour. I wish I had more time with each of them. And then I thought that should be my podcast. And so specifically, I wanted to focus on people in the entertainment industry and how they started and how they moved up to where they were today. Because there's a lot of stuff about very successful people in the entertainment industry, about what they're doing now, maybe a recent project they're doing, and maybe occasionally getting a couple questions from when they were younger. But I was really focused actually on their early start. What was their first job? How did they get that coveted first position? How did they get to the next one? How did they know what they were doing? You know, some people started off as a production assistant, like the same one that I had kind of trailing me around on set. And then they're now the vice president in the major network. And I'll be like, well, how did you do that? You know, I think most people who are production assistants, they don't know that they can maybe translate that one day to a vice president of a network. So it's one of those things where, like, that's the part I was curious about. It's how, you know, I wanted to create this tribe of mentors where, mm-hmm. you know, people in different parts of the industry can explain what they do, writers, actors, directors, producers, showrunners of television shows. They can explain how they started, and maybe people can learn from it. And you know, what's been really great is I'm starting to really develop this community of people who come to me, who tell me that they sometimes reach out to these mentors on the podcast after hearing their story and feeling like they're more approachable, telling them, hey, I listen to your podcast with Michelle, and, you know, I'd love to talk to you. And now these people are their mentors. And sometimes I'm able to connect them with people, and sometimes they're connecting with each other and they're helping each other. So prize thing that came out from doing this podcast, it started off as this thing that I was curious about and that I was excited to get to know all these people and create this network of people. But now it's really become more than that, which is very exciting.
And it is an exciting show, and the fact that it's developed in that way, and yeah, you have created a community. You know, I could tell that from the second or third one that I listened to. It's like, this is important work, and you are creating a community and a way for people to try to figure things out in a business that's not always figure-outable, okay? It's just not. There is no, as it says on the description, it's not a linear career path. You don't know where it's coming. I remember one of the first books I read on acting said, you know, your friends that you grew up with, went to school, they may be going from acquisition to promotion to whatever, whereas, you know, you have a good gig, get a good part, but then once that's over, you got to hustle for another one. And it's a totally different animal. People aren't in it, just don't understand. You know, that's you have to keep on trying and keep on working. And you have such a good variety of people. Like Allison Kircher, casting associate, TV director, Bethany Rooney. You've had, oh my gosh, I love the one with the actress Madison Shamor.
Moon, yeah.
Ah,
she's great.
Yeah.
She's the series regular on The Lake, which is an Amazon show with Julia Stiles.
And she's also, what is she, hasn't she also done, was she on Blackish?
She was on Blackish too, yeah.
Yeah, and several other shows. And I remember she was talking about being in Atlanta doing a commercial for Coca-Cola. And it was also one of those stories where it's like, it's not cold, it's hot. They keep wetting it down so it'll look like it's a frosty bottle.
Exactly.
and she's
a good story.
Those are the real background stories. I like the one with Larry, help me pronounce his name, Saperstein?
Saperstein. Yeah, he's in High School Musical, the musical series on Disney.
Oh, what a good show.
Right. Olivia Rodrigo.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought so many times people like, you know, in the business, people get asked a lot of, can you help me? Can you do this for me? And they can't always. And maybe the people asking them don't have the background or the training that they need for what they asking this person for. But in your podcast, Mentors on the Mic, people are here, your guests come on, and they give real, legit information on how it's done, how it's not done, how to get yourself ahead, and if you're not ahead and don't know where to go, what you need to do to prepare yourself or train yourself to get there. And I think that's one of the most amazing things that, and you've got to be feeling that now, Michelle, that you are really providing a lot of help and information to people.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for listening and for those, for just such a sweet message and saying that. I really, really, really appreciate it. I mean, those are the things you hold on to, so thank you. Yeah, I agree. I think it didn't hit me until I'm now about to start my fourth season soon. But last year was my third season, and I remember doing my third season going, I think that this is, like, I am starting to see that I'm helping people. I am starting to see that people are asking me questions about the industry. I am seeing that, like, people are saying to me that they're reaching out to some of the people on my podcast and they're able to help them or give them advice on stuff or read their material sometimes, you know, and so that feels really good. And then, you know, in addition to that, in addition to my interviews, last season I started, and you mentioned this before, but, you know, I started doing these solo bonus episodes where I would take some of the things that people were talking to me about and create these, like, mini episodes on them. So I'd say, okay, we're here are ways to deal with rejection that I've learned, but also that my mentors on the podcast have shared, you know, like tips that they, you know, I had Amy Koppelman on the show, who's a director and a writer. She directed and wrote A Mouthful of Air with Amanda Seyfried. And, you know, she has been doing this for quite some time. And I asked her, like, how do you deal with the crazy rejection that a writer deals with or that a director deals with? And she gave some such great advice that I was like, I need to make a whole new episode just talking about ways to deal with rejection. And that was really well received from people. People really enjoyed going, oh, here are great ways to deal with the inevitable rejection that's in any part of this career, like any job that's in the entertainment industry, there's some rejection. So it's been really nice expanding the original message of the podcast, which were these interviews, and now sort of taking some of that out and going, you know, I have some of my most popular episodes are tips from casting directors. A lot of actors listen to my podcast, I think, because of me. And, you know, I created these episodes that are just like, here are tips from casting directors about putting together self-tape and auditions. And here are some really great tips from casting directors that all they want actors to know. And I took these shows and put them in together. And, I mean, people loved that. They really got a lot of information just from that. And those were in my podcast episodes anyway. They might have heard it already. They might not have listened to all of them. But having it compiled together in these mini bonus episodes became really helpful, too. So I'm really working on ways to expand that and be more helpful to people.
Oh, yeah, I like that, because the first time I heard the one with Larry, I'll just call him Big Red from High School Musical.
Yeah, that's how he called,
yeah. It was in one of those bonus episodes that you do, and I think it might have been the one about rejection.
Yeah.
So then I thought, oh, she's paying an extra. Okay, and that's somebody else I can go listen to and hear more from him. And it's just so much fun. And here's the thing, it doesn't matter where you are in this business, you've got people in every aspect and ready to help, but there's a lot of things that you don't have to be involved in anything that has to do with show business to get a lot of value from the podcast, such as things like how to calm your nerves, memory tips, how to, you know, and things about handling rejection.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, well, so it's interesting. 3 or so years ago, I started, maybe almost 4, I started taking my acting skills and figuring out ways to create, like, I think what it was is I was thinking of other things I wanted to do outside of acting. And this girl that I know that I used to work with, she has a company called Energizer Voice. She used to be an actor. She got her master's in voice, and she translated those acting skills into a communication coaching business. And I remember thinking to myself, well, I'm a great communicator. Like, that is a strength of mine. Like, I was trying to think of other things I can do outside of acting. So when acting gets a little slow, or when, you know, just to have something else, you know, you get to a certain age where you're like, oh, I want to do other things too. And one of my strengths, I think, is communication. And so I approached her and I said, you know, is there any way I can kind of help you with this? And she was amazing and a mentor to me. And she took me on and sort of taught me things she knew, and I was starting to, and the whole idea is to take our act ground and take our performance skills and what we know as actors and work on specific communication skills, like overcoming nerves, like how to calm yourself before auditions or before presentations or before keynote speaking, you know, and that's something that I've been able to then take and form this other career with, which is being a communication coach, working with clients in public speaking, teaching classes, teaching corporate classes and workshops, all on different subjects related to storytelling for professionals, you know, public speaking and how to feel really confident in speaking. Did you know that most people are more afraid of public speaking than they are of dying? Isn't that crazy? But
yeah.
It's a true thing. I think Seinfeld is a really good joke about how, you know, people are more afraid to give the eulogy than they are being in the coffin.
I'd never heard that from
you. Yeah, it's a good
sense.
One. So that's, you know, I started to combine it with the podcast a little bit, and I started going, you know what, let me put a podcast episode about overcoming nerves, and let me put a podcast episode about memory tips and tricks, because that's what my clients want to know. They want to know, you know, how do I not be nervous before this Zoom meeting even that I'm presenting on? How do I memorize this speech in a way that, like, are there any tricks to that? And I'm like, yeah, as actors, we have to memorize things all the time, and we have to memorize them quickly. So let me work on preparing something on how to, you know, different tricks about memory. So that's something I've been able to combine with the podcast, which has also been really nice, but also being able to form my own business out of.
Well, that's brilliant. So as a communications coach, Michelle, suppose somebody's listening and they go, you know, I love the movies, I love TV, but I'm not an actor and I have no plan to be one. However,
yeah,
I'm just a person working in accounts payable. I'm not a CEO. Mm-hmm. I don't give a speech, but I've got to talk to groups of people. How do they hire
right.
you?
Well, yeah, all they would have to do is write to me, right? Michelle at michellesimonemiller.com. And, you know, I can give them some of the stuff that I've worked on, and it will have a little consultation. The whole idea, though, is most of the people that I work with aren't actors. I have people in finance, in sales, I have one documentary producer who's a client of mine, I think one actor, and, you know, and then there, you know, a nurse, a doctor, you know, like there's all these things that presentations and public speaking are actually really, really great to work on. And it's not something we often feel like there are people out there to do that. But so you don't have to be an actor. You don't have to be in the industry to do this. But in fact, I think the performance background that I have helps make these type of exercises more palatable, more fun, less stodgy. You know, I think it's an advantage to have all these improvisation exercises that I've grown up doing, and being able to share them and going, hey, this is how this fun exercise we just did, this is how we can work on mental agility and the ability to think on our feet. You know, I've had clients say, you know, approach me in classes or privately saying, hey, you know, Michelle, you know what I'm nervous about? I'm not nervous about the presentation. I'm nervous about the Q&A afterwards. I'm nervous that, you know, someone's going to ask me a question and I'm not going to know how to answer it well. What if my answer's jumbled up? Sometimes I'll answer and I'll be like, you know, I feel like I'm stalling for a while trying to think of the answer. And so then I'll just do mental agility exercises. I'll play all these games with them on how to think on your feet and how to feel confident that we all have the ability to think on our feet if we just give ourselves the time and the confidence to get there. And so that's a lot of how I do things. So if anyone's interested in this, feel free to write to me at michelle@michellesimonemiller.com or write to me on Instagram @michellesimonemiller. And I'm happy to talk with you about different skills, different things we can work on together, because it's, first of all, really fun for me. But often my clients find that it's a very fun way of getting better at something that they'd always been nervous
about. Oh, gosh, I'm sure. I can think about somebody in any kind of business, whether they're a data analyst or as you mentioned, a nurse or somebody, they know
exactly.
their subject. They know what they're talking about. They know what they do, but to get in front of people. And then I didn't even think about it till you said they can give their talk, but then when it comes to the Q&A, the nervous, that didn't even occur to me. But
yeah.
It's got to
or
be.
Or what if, like, things happen? I mean, you know, like, things happen, right? Like, you're, you know, if you're interviewing me right now and something happens, like, you know, my phone dies and all of a sudden I'm not there anymore and you just have to talk, right? You can do that. You have the confidence to know I can handle that when that happens. But things happen all the time in the environment where, like, let's say like a Zoom thing goes wrong. You're presenting mm-hmm. on Zoom and something goes wrong. Or what if people don't look like they're listening or they don't have their cameras on? So you're like, what's going on? How do I get people to, like, interact with me? And those are all things that we can be prepared for and feel confident in. But we don't, yeah. And I also, I'll add this. I also have a membership that I haven't really been talking about too much, so I have to remember to talk about it. But it's with clients who have worked with me before who just want a steady practice of coming in twice a month and just working with me on Zoom in, like, a group format. And it's, you know, it's not an expensive membership. It's just a way for people to come in on their own time when they feel like they can. And just work on some of these skills, work on public speaking, work on presenting, work on mental agility, like I said, working on telling stories and feeling really good about them, but in a very, like, low-risk environment kind of thing. So I do have that as well. If someone's like, I just want to come in and maybe not work one-on-one, but just have a group there, that would be great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, definitely want to share more about that in all of my social media posts. That's excellent. I got to imagine you take these people and you get them through their any kind of little, with your mental agility exercises and memory tips and everything you do. You build their self-confidence because let's face it, Zoom is going to be here to stay. A lot of people don't want to go back to the office, so it's like, well, then I'll have to be on Zoom, but at least I won't have to be in traffic. But you've got, here's what I want to picture, Michelle. It's when they come to you and you coach them and you prepare them for this and get them ready to do, to take on any Q&A, any message, any Zoom, and they just blossom. You've got to feel like a fairy godmother.
It's the best feeling ever. It's so, you know, sometimes people come to me when they don't have anything specific, like they don't have, like, a presentation they know they're going to work on. They're just working on the skills on the longer scale because they know those things are going to come up. But sometimes they have something, whether it's a networking event and they're really shy and they're like, oh, you know, I'm not used to going up to people at these networking events, or presenting something that they were working on that we worked on together. And then they come back to me afterwards like, oh, I felt amazing. And that is the best feeling for me. Or they're just
sure.
Like, it worked. Everything went well. Like, I felt really good about how I, you know, sometimes it's even as simple as, like, I don't, you know, some people just don't feel confident talking about themselves. Right? I start most of my membership sessions with everyone talking for 1 minute about either themselves or some subject that I give them that's related to them. And people get more and more confident with just talking about themselves or talking about what they do in a succinct way. You know, most people feel really uncomfortable. They'll say what they do and they do it in a way that's, like, flippant or no one understands what they're saying, or people have to ask more questions, or they go on for too long. And so, you know, it's fun just having those small adjustments where it's like, let's get really confident on just explaining your brand, explaining the company, explaining your job that you work on, and seeing them, because that's something people get asked all the time to talk about, and seeing the difference in just even just a few weeks, like a couple weeks, of just like, oh wow, like it's so much easier to talk about myself on a date. It's so much easier to talk about myself at work. So those are the moments that I just get so excited about.
I just love it. I love the sound of it. I love hearing you talk about it. Michelle, you know, everybody talks about meaningful work, wants to do meaningful work or make an impact, or what will I leave on this earth? You know, what will people remember about me? And I think what you do as an actor when you bring a role to life on a major show like Blue Bloods or any other, or when you're just on stage doing a live play or any of your, you know, commercials, TV, everything that you do that you bring something special to something authentic and believable to the people watching you, to your audience or to your viewers. That is doing meaningful work. But also what you're doing for people who come to you, whether they're coming to you to coach them on how to speak or how to do this, or they join the membership group just to continue it, that's got to feel like incredibly meaningful work.
It does. It does. And I always tell people, a lot of my clients sometimes come to me a little bit lost and I don't know what else to do, or I'm an actor and I don't know if there's something else that I'm meant to do. And I always say, there's a really great, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. There's a signature strength, like a strength test that you can take online. And I think the one I took was VIA, I forgot the name of the company, but it's some sort of institute. And the idea is you take this quiz. It's a very easy quiz to take, just takes a few minutes. And they give you a list of your strengths, your character strengths. And, there's a misunderstanding that people need to work on their weaknesses every day in order to get better as a human being. But often when you work on your strengths every day, that's when you experience proven happiness. That's when studies show you're actually happier. It's when you're working on your strengths every day. And so I asked myself, well, what are my strengths? And I identified some of them. And when I did, it just felt right, being able to just do what I love doing and that I'm good at. So I do encourage people, take this quiz, this signature strengths quiz, and ask yourself, like, what stuff are you good at? What stuff makes you happy? Because, the more you fill your time with things that make you happy, right, the more, you wake up every day and it doesn't feel as hard, and, you go to sleep and it doesn't feel as long, or, it's definitely something that I think everyone should think about more. And I try to remind myself that all the time. When I think of new projects I want to do, I'll be like, what stuff am I good at and what stuff do I enjoy doing?
This is totally new to me. I've never heard of this before, but I'll definitely check it out, and I definitely will share it with people. But Michelle, you've been so generous with your time with me tonight, and I know I've taken up a lot of your time, and you've got a lot of things to do. So in the few minutes, two things I wanted to bring up too is that, you have your podcast, you have great guests, and then you do these excellent little bonus episodes that are just absolute jewels. But you're going to have something else coming up soon. I think it's you and your friend Kate Bone.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. I've started this little mini series. And actually, I dropped the first episode last Friday, but the second episode's coming out tomorrow. And I don't know if anyone's ever heard of the book Atomic Habits. It's on all the best-selling charts. It's, New York Times bestseller, all that stuff. And it's by James Clear. And I read the book in December. I was on my honeymoon. And I read this book and I was like, oh my God, I have to put this on the podcast, because it just felt like a form of mentorship with like really key advice as to how to feel better about your life. It's all about habits, creating habits that are good, breaking bad habits that you don't want anymore in your life, and how to change that for yourself. And there's so many tips and there's so many techniques. And so I asked my friend, who's also an actress, who also is in, has her own community of actors, to get together, and we do this virtually, and we recorded 5 mini episodes together where we broke down this book, Atomic Habits, into, just pocket-sized episodes that go over all these tips and tricks. And so we're putting them out every Friday. Like I said, tomorrow's the second one, and it's great tips on how to create, habits in your life and feel like you're really creating big change with small habits. And then on Sundays, so this Sunday as well, we're having integration calls where you can hop on Zoom with us for 45 minutes and help take these habits of that week and put them into action. And I made all these like very fun worksheets where it's like all these like habit stackers and habit trackers and implementation technique, all this stuff that he talks about in the book. And I like have them written down that people can fill them out and kind of determine what they want to focus on that week. And it's really exciting. So if there's any interest, guys, go to Mentors on the Mic, listen to the most recent episode on Atomic Habits, which is another one tomorrow. They're very bite-sized. They're about 15, 20 minutes long. And then join us on our calls on Sundays. We're even doing a raffle if you sign up to do these integration calls. you can submit, you know, win a chance to be, to win this, these awesome prizes that we have in store. So
ooh,
it's a really fun thing. If anyone wants to work on that, it's really fun.
That sounds like the best party of all. I love it. Michelle, aww, one more thing before I let you go. And, again, thank you for being so generous with your time. I'm so grateful you came on the show. And I'm so hoping that you'll come back again.
Absolutely.
All right, one more thing. I saw a little something that you're working on a book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually written two books, but the book that I'm going to go, I'm going to work on right now, the one that I want to like get published first, it's a children's book, actually. So, yeah, so it's so exciting. I absolutely love it. A few years ago, I dreamt this entire book in a dream, and I woke up, wrote it all down on a phone, on my phone, just like all the characters, all the things that happened. And it's about a little boy who, right before he goes to sleep, the night before his birthday, and he's sick, and he asks his mom to, you know, he wants to fight the cold, and his mom says, you know, be careful what you wish for, it might come true. And he wakes up, and he's in front of this cave that says Billy's Nose. And when he walks in, he joins the battle of the nose, of his cold. And he fights the bad germs. He joins the WBC, or the White Blood Cell Army. And he joins General Noser. And he learns why there's coughing, why he sneezes, why he has medicine, why it's water. So it's this incredible book. I hired someone to do the illustrations. They're absolutely beautiful. And my next step, and I haven't figured out what this next step is and which way I'm going to go, but I either will self-publish it or I either will start submitting and querying agents to get this book out there and in the traditional publishing. And there's pros and cons for both that people keep telling me. But if anyone has any advice out there as to which route I should go, let me know, because I'm hoping to decide soon which way I want to go. But the book is completely done, so it's very exciting.
Beautiful. Well, you know, I'm a book publicist, so the first thing I'll say is what you're doing right now, start promoting well before it's published.
Right.
So
right.
Even better, which, as I said, that's exactly what you're doing. And, oh, my gosh, yes, it sounds perfect. All right. And the next book? You know, I'm going to pull this out of you.
The other book, yeah, the other book is a business of acting book. So I decided I have to do one at a time. So the children's book is first, but the other one is a business of acting book. And it's literally every chapter breaks down all the things that I wish I knew when I graduated college. You know, things that people ask me all the time about auditions, about headshots, about, you know, sprinkled in with stories of my own. So that's, I mean, I don't even know how many pages it is, but I think last I checked it was about 300 or I don't know. It's on Word, so you never know with Word, and you have to translate word count and then estimate
true
the pages. But it was a lot. It was a lot. Maybe 150. I haven't calculated in a while, but it was a lot of pages and, like, multiple chapters. And so that's also pretty much done.
Fantastic. I am so excited. This has been so much fun, and I am just so delighted to talk with you. Michelle Simone Miller, thank you for being my guest here on Madam Perry Salon. I just wish you every bit of continued success in the world. If there is anything I can do for you, and for, please don't ask, just tell. Just let me know. And you know what? I just think that these books, your books, are going to be runaway successes. And will you come back again?
100%.
We're going to have even more fun. So anything you want to know about Michelle Simone Miller, her shows, her podcast, the membership groups and coaching, everything, I'm going to be sharing that on all of my social media and look forward to talking with her again. Michelle, you got any parting words?
Take action, everyone. You know, take risks, take action. You know, they talk about in Atomic Habits, you know, try not to be in motion all the time. You know, sometimes I get very stuck on planning and mm-hmm. you know, studying and trying to, but, you know, I'm trying to take more action this year. So go ahead, take more action, make the podcast, write the book, put it out there.
Excellent. Perfect. All right. Well, be talking to you soon. And this is Madame Perry Salon. JP, your groove mistress here, saying thank you so much for listening. And definitely check out Michelle Simone Miller's podcast and her website. And I'm going to close out with my motto for my song, Everybody's Got to Swing. Thank you so much, folks. Everybody be kind to yourself and be kind to each other. I think you're all wonderful. Goodbye.